When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello and welcome to Talking Point. I'm Mark Smith, stepping in for Henry this week, and what a week it's been. Max Verstappen winning the inaugural Miami Grand Prix and surviving some late pressure to cut Charles Leclerc's lead at the top of the table to 19 points. Joining me today are F1 writer Finlay Klebolda and comedian and host of the Dirty Air podcast, Alfie Brown. Here's what's coming up on the show. Finlay Klebolda and Alfie Brown will be dissecting what we've just seen in Miami and looking through what other people thought of the race in our reader comments. We'll be picking apart some of the individual performances of the weekend in our driver ratings. Who impressed? Who didn't? Now the dust has settled in Miami, we'll see if we can draw some meaningful conclusions from it. And our special guest, Alfie Brown, will talk us through his F1 firsts. Right, plenty to get stuck into then. Let's crack on, shall we? Finlay Klebolda, Alfie Brown, I want to know your general thoughts of this inaugural Miami GP. We'll start with you, Finlay. What did you make of the whole thing?
Yeah, mixed bag on the whole, I think. I think off track kind of symbolically for F1, I think they'll be feeling pretty good right now. They've wanted to crack America for years. Obviously, it was one of Liberty's big aims when they came in, and it kind of feels like they've done that now. Sold out grandstands, massive atmosphere the whole weekend, real enthusiasm from Americans about it. So in that sense, it was a big success. In terms of entertainment, I didn't love it really. It was entertaining once there was a safety car for the last few laps, but I don't think it's ever ideal really when you need a safety car to really, you know, make things interesting. Mixed bag on the whole, but overall, I can't say I enjoyed it massively.
So Alfie Finlay there saying that he liked the off-track stuff, the entertainment, the glitz and the glamour. He's been sucked into it, hasn't he? What did you make of the off-track stuff? Was it too American for your taste, or is this what you expect?
No, I think they should. I'm a big fan of all the nonsense that goes around it. Like, why not make it fun? It's not spoiling anything as long as they're still racing. The ironic thing was that, like, this is a race put on for the Drive to Survive Formula One fan generation, trying to get everybody involved. Oh, look, it's Michael Jordan. Oh, look, there's let's put a swan. All the water is, you know, even drier than the race. Amazing. I actually thought the race was, it wasn't, I didn't mind it. I didn't think it was that boring. I quite enjoyed it. I watched it in a weird way though, because I'm in Perth, Australia. I woke up at 5:30. So I missed all grid walks, all anything like that. I just was, you know, woke up for lights out and then actually fell asleep halfway through and watched the rest of it today.
That's the way it was intended.
Knowing what had happened. I thought there was some good overtakes, but there weren't that many. Weirdly, it was like a race for purist Formula One fans to enjoy in a scenery that was set up purely for the fair weather.
Yeah, very, yeah, interesting take that, Alf, because, yeah, you wouldn't expect that from this. You expect this to be a brand new, swanky, just for the new generation of fans. But actually, yeah, the older guys, I think, would have recognised this as a race they've seen before. We've had lots of people get in touch with the show, the reader comments. Dean got in touch to say, as a race, pretty boring and needed a safety car to inject some life into it. As an event, quite cool, though, and would obviously like to be there, but doesn't come close to traditional tracks. You touched upon this at the start, Finlay. It is an issue, isn't it, when the safety car is the only thing that can get us talking, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I would have enjoyed it more if I kind of fell asleep and then watched the rest knowing there was a safety car to come. It probably would have been quite fun. Yeah, maybe I'll try again. But with that uncertainty about whether there's going to be a safety car or not, the rest of the race was kind of, you just sat there praying for one, because, I mean, really the race had fizzled out. Verstappen was cruising at the front. There were DRS trains back in the midfield. I mean, the final sector really kind of made it so difficult to pull off moves. I mean, the most of the race, I think a lot of fans were kind of just hoping for a safety car. And in a perfect world, that's not the case. You kind of get entertained without it. Safety car just adds a bit more chaos to the fun. But on the whole, I don't think it was the best track layout. And I mean, in a country as big as America, I think there were definitely a lot of better options. You know, Sebastian Vettel mentioned Indianapolis a few times, for example. That's one of many I think I would have liked to go to.
Well, yeah, well, a country with the number of race fans, you know, and the infrastructure they've got in place already for so many of these things, you'd hope that they could pick something maybe more suitable. As Dean said in his message there, it doesn't come close to traditional tracks. Austin seems like a good one. We've got Vegas next year as well. Alfie, is there any danger? Careful what I say here, but is there any danger with the F1 focusing so much on America and giving them three races a year and also looking so much at the Middle East that the Europe and the European events could be squeezed out a little bit?
There is a danger of that, but I think these things, they work in, like, the mood will kind of oscillate from one thing to another. When it will be, you'll have overcompensation with regard to what they're doing for the American market and the Middle Eastern, well, market, money, whatever you want to call it. And then you have to wait for that to kind of correct itself over time. If they focus too much on America, then they'll leave behind what made Formula One great in the beginning. But at the same time, if they want to become a global sport and get as many markets involved in watching as they possibly can, then all of this seems like a good idea. I quite like having kind of maybe just have Miami as a one-off. It's a lot of infrastructure to build for one race, but if you just had
a lot of money coming in for that one event, isn't it? So it is worth it.
A touring American Grand Prix where, you know, you have one in LA or have one in West Covina or Nantucket.
So where's West Covina?
It's California. It's just it's 2 hours to the beach. It's where the musical sitcom My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is set.
Wow, we're learning a lot today. This is I like that plan, though. I like that idea of a touring F1 circuit. That sounds brilliant. Finlay, any thoughts on that, on the nonsense I said at the start there with America and the Middle East?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, there's generally, I think British people in particular don't really love American sort of, you know, gimmicks, that kind of big WWE style entertainment that they bring into other sports. But I don't know, I don't think it's a problem if it's only for a few races a year. You know, if you only do that sort of thing at the American races, then sure, it's something different, it's funny, it's cringy, but, you know, I don't think it's too much. If they try and bring that to, like, you know, the Belgian Grand Prix or something, I don't think anyone's going to like that. So, you know, I think if it's just for the American races. But yeah, I think they need to kind of keep that sort of style away from the more traditional circuits as well.
Yeah, well, Wojtek Pokorny has been in touch with the show. He says, he disagrees with you. He says, it was dreadful. I'm not even talking about entertainment of the race. I'm talking about the TV production. Not only this race, but the whole season, FIA and horrible podium ceremony. I was a victim of the Miami hype train and I am deeply saddened. Well, Wojtek. I mean, that seems overly negative to me. I mean, we're having a bit of fun with it. I did enjoy it. I enjoyed the stuff around it. But I've got to say, the Martin Brundle stuff at the start as he's walking up and down the strip talking to people. I found that a bit much. I normally find it cringeworthy. Yesterday, I felt like my skin was going to crawl off my body. It was that bad. Alfie, what did you make of it?
Well, as I previously mentioned, I woke up at 5:30 a.m. and didn't. I was asleep for the Martin Brundle pit walk. No. So I actually found his pit walk very restful.
Well, have you not seen anything?
But I'm very sorry.
Trending, like, number three in the world. Have you not seen any of this on the internet?
I woke up for the Grand Prix, went back to sleep, woke up, flew from Brisbane to Perth. It takes 5 hours, by the way, and then. And now I'm here speaking to you. So I'm afraid I'm not across all pit walk information. But I will say to Wojciech Pokorny that I'm sorry that he's deeply saddened. But what I thought was interesting is he says that he was taken in rather by the Miami hype train.
He was a victim of the hype train.
It was a victim. I don't want to victim blame him. But if you are taken on by the Miami hype train and then you watch it, and you're, well, I didn't think it was going to be like this. Well, what did you think it was going to be like?
Why is it so glamorous in Miami? What are they doing?
Why have they tried to erect a fake marina? Oh, no. Get your guide, traveler. Go away.
But you did watch the Martin Brundle stuff, Finley. Am I being oversensitive there? Or do you think that was a bit of a pardon the pun, car crash?
I was about to actually... use car crash terminology, because I was going to say it's like when you drive past a car crash on the motorway and you don't want to look, but you can't look away.
Your eyes
are just drawn to it.
It's called rubbernecking.
Rubbernecking.
Yeah. I mean, it was, incredibly cringy. But on the other hand, it was pretty entertaining. I think it probably would have... I was watching it with my American girlfriend, actually, and she really enjoyed it, just watching this kind of random chubby British man walk along a grid talking to American celebrities that he has no idea who they are. I mean,
They were rude, though, weren't they? They were so rude, so many of them.
They were rude, yeah. I think Venus Williams, there's kind of an amusing kind of story developing there, because Martin Brundle's bumped into the Williams sister with sisters a few times at tracks, and they've always kind of, parred him off a bit, so... I think he's going to start to, I think he should just give up on that. But I mean, on the other, there was other celebrities, DJ Khaled, who Martin Brundle had no idea who he was. But he was,
Why would he?
Yeah, yeah. I can't imagine he listens to too much of him. But yeah, he was up for it. He was friendly. He gave some good comments. So it was a mixed bag, but definitely entertaining. And yeah, like you said, he was one of the top trends on Twitter in the world. So. Yeah, definitely.
But what I think here, Alfie, is if these, I know you didn't see it because you were asleep and being unprofessional, but if this is the way that celebrities treat people when there's a camera there, how would they treat scum like me and you, Alf?
Well, I think actually, if you had like one of I don't know, like whoever everybody broadly speaking knows to be a bit of a monster, like you had Ellen DeGeneres or James Corden, and they were on a pit.
Because
Ellen's listening to this show and is going to sue. If there was a true monster of a celebrity on the grid walk, I reckon they'd be really nice. I reckon they, because it's that sort of psychopathic, oh, there's a camera here. I know that there's a camera here.
Yes.
Whereas people who are just kind of authentically living their lives go, if I didn't know who Martin Brundle was and some like guy dressed head to toe in Charles Tyrwhitt came up to me and went, can I speak to you about motor racing? I go, no, I'm talking to Tom Brady. Leave me alone.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It's good to have. I'm pleased that the ultra rich have got someone into bat for them, and it's Alfie Brown of all people. We will talk more about the race itself as we go on with the show, and we'll have some more reader comments. But coming up next, we're going to have driver ratings. So driver ratings on your screen there. We'll be discussing Charles Leclerc, George Russell, Valtteri Bottas, and Daniel Ricciardo. Okay, then let's start with Charles Leclerc. Started on pole, fell off pretty quickly. Well, we've got a score of 8 out of 10 here on the website. Finley, what do you make of Leclerc's performance here?
I think 8 out of 10 is pretty fair. I think he really needed a good weekend after a bit of a disastrous end to his Grand Prix last time out in Imola. Obviously, making a mistake while chasing Perez for P2, crashing. So he really needs to bounce back here, and he won't be, he might be a bit disappointed he didn't win, but on the whole, in terms of his driving, I think it was, a strong weekend for him. This was Max Verstappen at his very, very best, as we'll talk about in a bit. So I think to even be anywhere near him is a big compliment. And Leclerc was, I mean, especially that safety car restart. I really thought he was going to get him. He was going to win. I think on the whole, it was a strong weekend for him. And a weekend in which he was ahead of Carlos Sainz throughout. You know, he's really kind of taken charge of that team and Ferrari's title charge this year.
Yeah, and he's very likable, isn't he, Alfie? He's a very likable guy. I find myself rooting for him, but I don't know what he's supposed to do against the straight line speed of the Red Bull.
Yeah, he is very, very likable, kind of charming and sweet, and looks like Timothy Chalamet. There really is very little not to like. When Verstappen overtook Charles on the, what was it, the ninth lap or something like that? I can't remember. The commentator said, I think it's just a case of a Red Bull having a faster car there. And I thought, yeah, that'll do it. Yeah, having a faster car is almost certainly what's done that.
That's why you get paid the big bucks as a commentator.
I also think, like, Max and Red Bull have both gone through a sort of similar maturing process. Max over a longer term period. Like, he's had his controversial championship win. He's now, and he's had to deal with the pressure of being in that title race and basically bottling it, if not for Michael Massey. But now he's got that a maturity about him that means that he's not going to take unnecessary risks. He's going to wait for, not go too hard on tires, wait for them to develop, wait for them to gain traction on the track, not push anything too hard, not go too crazy. And Charles, I think it seemed like they didn't do enough. I think, like, there's a good YouTube channel you can watch called Peter Windsor's YouTube channel, which he says that Ferrari didn't do the same amount of homework as Red Bull did. And I think that's a good observation. Very fair.
Up next, George Russell. And he's got a score of 8.5 here, Finley. He finished fifth, and in so doing became the only driver to finish in the top five in every race this season. So remarkable consistency from him. And I suppose if you can't be perfect in your race, you want to be lucky. And he made a decision to wait and see if there was a safety car. And then, would you believe, out pops a safety car. Now, was that luck or was that judgment?
It was a bit of both, I think. I mean, he was counting on some good luck and he got it. He deserves a lot of credit for the fact that he stayed out. I'm not sure if his team necessarily would have kept him out. We obviously heard him on the radio a few times telling them not to bring him in just for that reason. But ultimately, what made it work was the fact that he could still have decent pace on those old tyres. He managed those hards really well. Even just before he pitted, his pace was really strong, kind of matching Perez, who obviously had a power issue, but still. I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. And I think what was really interesting was when, after he got that luck, after the safety car restart, when he had a teammate, Lewis Hamilton, in front of him, he did not do a Valtteri Bottas. He had no interest in kind of playing second fiddle and holding back. He got past Hamilton when he had to give the place back. He made sure he gave it back just before a DRS zone so he could take it back again immediately. I think that a lot of people thought he'd maybe would, you know, kind of bide his time, be a bit of a number two this year because he knows Hamilton's probably going to retire soon. But yeah, judging by that performance, he's got no interest in doing that whatsoever.
No, he's a competitor, isn't he, Alfie? And I think it takes a lot of mental fortitude to be able to concentrate the way he does with a car that is not performing the way they would have expected.
What I've been saying about Hamilton and Russell, I think it's a very interesting kind of thing to look at from a mentality perspective, because you've got Hamilton here who's, you know, old. Like, if you're used to winning every single year and then suddenly you're in a crap car that you don't really know, like, how you ended up in, like, what the hell am I doing in a car that's, like, you know, picking up the best bits of the midfield? This is not what I'm in it for. Then that's going to deplete your enthusiasm for what's going on to such an extent that you might just struggle to perform at your peak. But for George, he's like, well, yeah, I'm not in a Williams anymore. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. Like, I know I was expecting, but this is so fantastic. I love driving. And, you know, yeah, he was lucky. And that's what everybody has been saying on online when they're, you know, oh, George is so lucky. How many times when Lewis was winning championships did we see him get lucky? How many times last season did we see Max get lucky? Like, you see people get lucky and they drive themselves into positions of good luck. Good for George. I love him. Baby driver.
Baby driver. And 8.5, I think, is a very fair score. I think he was outstanding all weekend. Let's talk about Valtteri Bottas. He's got a score of 5 here, Finley. I think that's really harsh. Apart from that that corner he took wide towards the end, I don't think he made too many mistakes. And I think he is sort of thriving being number one at a team.
Yeah, I mean, John Wild, Planet F1 writer, who did these articles, got a fair bit of flack for giving Bottas a 5. And I hate, you know, I did the driver ratings last year, got a lot of complaints in the comment section.
You're never going to win.
No, I remember there was one particular person who took to kind of complaining in the comments and putting my name in quotation marks when he mentioned me, sort of suggested that I was
Finley Klebold.
Yeah, using like a fake
you
name
don't or, exist.
Yeah, or like not a real person or something. I hate to join the dark side and criticize, but I think 5's a really harsh rating, to be honest. I think he was top of the midfield.
Well, some people agree though here. We've got Tom Jansson got in touch with the show here. He says Bottas was comfortably top of the midfield all weekend and almost beat both Mercedes cars. Would have if not for one small error. So actually, no, he seems to be pretty positive, it turns out. I thought he was being negative. He's not. Tom Jansson, I take it back.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think, yeah, Bottas was top of the midfield all weekend, you know, qualifying the race. And he would have even beaten two Mercedes if not for one small error. Obviously, that wasn't the best piece of driving, but I think aside from one error, he was, yeah, pretty flawless. And for me, he was one of the drivers of the weekend and is one of the drivers of the season so far.
Another beneficiary of the positive mental shift that comes from not having to be a number two anymore and getting to kind of take control of your own destiny and just drive for the joy of driving and rediscover what it was. And I think that's seen a massive uplift in his in what it was for him to kind of his driving style, rather, and how he's going about his work. It's great to see.
Yeah, he's another very likable guy, and this is maybe one of the reasons why Drive to Survive was so popular. It really does humanize these people, I think, and Bottas came out of that brilliantly and continues to do so. Finally, driver ratings. Daniel Ricciardo, another 5 here, Finley.
Yeah, I think this is a fair one. Giving Ricciardo and Bottas 5 the same rating is a bit crazy in my eyes, because Bottas was great mainly, and Ricciardo, yeah, I mean, this hurts. You know, I love Daniel Ricciardo. I especially love him when he comes to America and he does his awful accent and he wears ridiculous clothes, and generally he kind of pairs that love of racing with America with some good performances. You know, he's usually really good at Austin, so I was optimistic that he could kind of, you know, kickstart his career again here, because he's had a pretty poor start to the season. But yeah, he didn't. Got a bit of bad luck in qualifying. Obviously, there was a startup issue, which meant he was knocked out in Q2. But he still had a lot of chances to recover in the race, but spent it kind of towards the back, P15, I think, most of the time. And then a safety car came in and put him in P11 on like fresh softs, I'm pretty sure. So I thought, oh, okay, he can at least, you know, score a few good points. But again, he was just sort of stuck in the train, not making any moves that we're so used to him seeing, and making in the past. So yeah, it's it hurts seeing him like this, because I love Danny Rick, and I was optimistic he'd turn things around this weekend, but just another step backwards, I think.
Yeah, Alfie, any thoughts on Daniel Ricciardo?
It feels like he's had his head burned out and he needs like somebody to give him a hot stone massage and sort of reset his brain. He also, I mean, quite clearly is not long for McLaren. I don't know what's going to happen there, but I would imagine it's either going to be somebody like Albon or maybe Schumacher that goes into there, depending on what contracts. I don't know who's got what contracts, but Danny Rick needs a fresh start and he needs a bit of love. And I mean, he's not young, is he? He's all got a young spirit, but he's not a young driver, is he? So I think it's like it's Hail Mary time for him in terms of getting to achieve something. I don't think he'll ever be a world champion. I mean, it would be incredible if he ever made it there. But back when it was like, you know, Hamilton, Vettel and Ricciardo, and those were kind of the big three drivers. And Ricciardo was the young man. You looked like he was coming through, and he was kind of dead cert to win things. And yeah, it is really, it's not great. And I hope that he gets an Indian summer in his career, so to speak.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
I couldn't believe it yesterday when Croft said the stat that Daniel Ricciardo has now matched Mark Webber's total race tally. It just seems crazy because to me, Ricciardo's still a fairly young driver.
Just started.
He's still a fairly young driver. And Mark Webber was kind of around from before I was alive. So
yeah, he was old for about 15 years.
Yeah, he was old when he was 18. So it seems nuts that Ricciardo's going to, assuming he finishes the season, going to pretty comfortably surpass that tally. And it kind of puts into perspective the fact that, he's kind of stayed in the same place.
He's underachieved. I think it's fair to say. And it does pain me to say that because, like everybody, I'm a big fan of Daniel Ricciardo. Anyway, let's move on. Time for our conclusions to this week's Miami Grand Prix. We'll start with Max Verstappen. Finley, he's had a lot of fantastic drives over his career, hasn't he, Verstappen? Could we conclude from this, was that his best ever drive?
It was up there. I'd probably put it top five. I don't have a list in my head. I think probably a few races in Brazil would be at the top. But this was seriously impressive. I mean, he just kind of took complete control of the race, dominated. I thought the move on Sainz at the start was really good, really important. Obviously, he cleared the number two Ferrari and it was perfectly judged. And then after that, again, did the same on Leclerc and just dominated, really. The only brief moment it looked like he'd get challenged in any way whatsoever was after that safety car restart when Leclerc was a bit quicker than him, but he kept his cool.
But that was so impressive. That was so impressive because he's had the whole race. Obviously, I know he's driving full throttle all the way around, and there's no one breathing down his neck. So for suddenly, after that many laps, to have someone right on top of you like that, to keep your cool, keep your composure, and see it out, I thought was maybe the most impressive part of his race overall. Alfie, what did you make of him?
I think as I've sort of touched on earlier, I think the maturity that he's showing this season is incredible and sort of shows a new side to his to him. When he was 18 and he first came into the fray, he was my favorite because he'll just sort of drive his car in front of yours. And if you choose to smash it, then you crash out the race. It's like he was playing, do you remember Last Action Hero? He's playing chicken with everybody.
Yes.
what a stupid reference. And I think actually Red Bull over the course of the not only weekend but season, the problems that they had in Friday with, everything bursting into flames or whatever happened, the DNFs they had at the beginning of the season, it's made them more meticulous about covering their bases, about doing the research on what hard tires, soft tires are like. That's that helped Max manage his hard tires better than Ferrari did. So, it was like sterile domination. You know, when you see like a title winning football team win 2-0 and just, it's not fun. It's not good, but it is.
It's a procession.
Exactly.
And I think it's also fair to point out that it's maybe more impressive from Verstappen, given how difficult Friday's practice was, which actually brings me on quite nicely to our next conclusion, I think, which is we need to talk about Mercedes in a bit more detail here, because on Friday, their practice session was excellent. It looked like, they've fixed it. They fixed the porpoising. They know what's going on. And then that disappeared overnight. That just disappeared. Alfie, where are you at with Mercedes? I mean, surely a decision is approaching now about what they do with this car concept now.
I did see improvements in the car. I think the straight line speed was back up to where it should be. There are other problems with things like downforce and this, the experimental changes that they've made. Obviously, Mercedes have been famous for making kind of big technological calls and them always coming off. And now, I don't think they really know what to do, but I think a gradual improvement towards making the situation that they're in better is the way that they go. I never, ever, ever like it when teams go backwards, because I don't really think that that sees them improve either. I think they should stick to what they're doing and tweak it, because they're going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think people's expectations are maybe too high going into this weekend, because Toto Wolff had really kind of bigged things up in his preview. He said, you know, they'd found a number of ways to fix performance, and we're going to start that in Miami. And I think a lot of people thought after practice, which I don't think really helped them in a lot of ways, in which George Russell topped it, everyone was kind of like, oh yes, old Mercedes are back. We're going to see Hamilton and Russell fighting for the win. Which obviously, yeah, it wasn't the case. And I think it's kind of unrealistic to expect that. I don't think they've got a chance of any titles this year, but I do think they can, if they keep developing at the rate they are, they can get into the contention for wins.
But they're not going to write it off, are they? They're not the sort of team that are ever going to write off a season.
And I mean, I think at least it looks like they've wrapped up third in the pecking order, which is, you know, not a disaster, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. When we talk about the top of the midfield, is it like maybe Mercedes are now the top of the midfield? Because we always spoke about McLaren as the top of the midfield when they were there. So now maybe it's just a force of habit doesn't allow you to talk about Mercedes as the top of the midfield.
Yeah, a very alien concept, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is like their car. All right. Let's talk about Mick Schumacher and his quest for points. Is it becoming ridiculous now, Finley? The collision with Vettel wasn't ideal, was it?
No, that wasn't ideal. That hurt, you know, seeing the son smack his dad in the face is not nice to watch. It was horrible. But I don't know. I'm not sure it's getting ridiculous quite yet. I mean, to bear in mind, last year he had a horrendous, horrendous car that was never going to get anywhere near the points. So he's had really five races in a car that can score points. And he hasn't done so yet. I don't think it's that bad. It is annoying though. I think, you know, I think it's probably his best performance since he joined the grid. He was quicker than Magnussen for most of the weekend. They had some really good wheel-to-wheel battles in which Schumacher, more than held his own. I really thought he was going to make it. I think it was P9, but then, that was a bit of a stupid error with Vettel, really.
It was.
I don't think you needed to really make that risk, considering he had a much faster car than Vettel as well. So.
No, exactly. Nick Jack's been in touch with the show. He says, you can't compare Mick's elusive first point to Russell's Williams quest. Mick's Haas has potential to score points at every race, but he simply isn't converting. Is that fair?
I mean, it is fair, but it's only five races into the season, you know.
Right, we're so early.
It's so early, and I think he's had some bad luck as well. And he's still, it's his five races into his second season. Yeah, it's early in this season, it's early in his career. So, yeah, I don't think it's quite as bad as Russell's in the sense, well, obviously Russell got points in the end, but there was a point where Russell was consistently making mistakes on Sundays during his time in Williams that saw him drop back. I don't think Schumacher's at that point yet. So, yeah, I don't think it's too bad for him.
Right, let's wrap up conclusions now. Alfie, is Albon Williams' current best asset?
Him versus Latifi? Yeah, I think so.
Hmm.
Yeah. He's better than Latifi, definitely. Asset? Yeah, I think he might be. Yeah. I think this is sort of reinvigorated him in the same way that I said Danny Ric needs reinvigorating, going to Williams and being able to show what he can do. And the nice thing for Albon is that we've had George Russell as a sort of like, look at what he did in that car. Versus now where he is, like where was he versus where he got to. And now I think that must be quite satisfying for Albon to go, look, this is the sort of quality of driver I am, outperforming Latifi. And, you know, I'm probably the Williams car's improved since George left. And I think the regulations have probably helped, you know, teams like Williams get more points. Not that it's helped Latifi or Mick Schumacher for that matter yet, but I think he's a really exciting driver. And he's matured in his style. He was another one who could be a bit sort of elbows out all over the place. I mean, he had awful luck at Red Bull with Hamilton sort of nipping him in the bottom twice and flinging him off the track. I really like Albon. He's one of my favorite drivers, and I really, really hope I see good things in the future for him.
A nice positive way to wrap up the conclusions there. Right, we're going to leave the main body of the show there. Finley, thank you for joining us. We can catch your writing where?
Yeah, so I'm still freelancing for Planet F1 at the moment, so you can check out my articles there. Got a piece going up on Bottas later this week, which I can rant a bit more about.
5 out of 10 Bottas.
Yeah, about John's disgraceful rating of him. So yeah, I'll be doing yeah. 1,000 words just on that. So yeah, it'll be good.
Alfie's going to stick around for Alfie Brown's F1 firsts. Cheers, Finley. Time now for Alfie Brown's F1 firsts. So let's start off, Alfie. Thanks for being on the show, by the way. A real pleasure to have
my
you on.
My pleasure.
Here. Let's start with this one. What's your first F1 memory?
My first F1 memory, I think, is from... I'm quite a recent convert to the world of Formula One. Not as recent as the Drive to Survive generation, but my story getting into F1, it does happen. I think it's like 2017, 2018, the year after Ross Brabham. Right. I think that's 2017.
That is new. That's new.
Yeah. So like 5 years I've been watching it, but I've watched one race, and I know that you asked me, you said, what was your first Formula One race, you know, in the text when you were asking me to do this. But the weird thing, I have a memory of, so my friend Josh, who you know as well, is a big Formula One fan, and he always wanted
me to podcast with
Formula
you.
One. He does the podcast with me. And he went, listen, you just have to watch it. You just have to watch it. You just have to watch till the first corner. And if you're not excited after the first corner, you never have to watch another race of me again. And I've watched. And the first corner, of course, is the most exciting bit of every race. And I think it was a particularly good one. I remember it was the, I can get up what the race was, but I haven't had a chance yet because of my mad flight and whatnot.
Hey, don't you worry.
But my love of it sort of developed over that time. And this is also why, I don't know, I think when you start watching something and the way in which you take it in, like we both grew up as football fans in the 90s, seeing Man United win every week and that every year, everything. And that became certainly incredibly boring for me and possibly incredibly boring for everybody. So despite the fact that they're kind of good, well-run club, you lose sight of that. And I think Hamilton had that for me. And Hamilton, I saw
very early
on. So you
grew up negatively thinking of him.
I just grew up with him as a villain because I didn't have any of his ascent. I only had him making races very boring with his dominance. And the same is true of Mercedes. But now I think, you know, him wearing 3 watches to a press conference, I got to go, fair play. That's funny stuff.
It's good, funny stuff. So your answer for first F1 memory is don't know. Okay, first favorite driver or team. Do you have one of those?
Ferrari and Vettel, definitely. And Vettel, because I never got to see his boring dominance. I never got to see him. Also, a much less likable team in Red Bull, even before Christian Horner had his teeth done. I loved Vettel, but I think also there's an old Damon Hill quote about somebody asked him, how did you know when it was time to retire? And Damon Hill went, I remember thinking it was time to retire when I saw everybody leave, set off on the race after lights out. And I remember thinking to myself, guys, what's the rush? And that was when I knew. That happened to Vettel slightly. He's kind of just enjoying living his, you know, nice life.
He's like a really, exactly. He's like a granddad in a very nice way. He's like a granddad who is still doing the thing he loves, but is just like, he has this sort of blanket of memories of success, and he's secure enough in himself that he can be the thing that gives him enjoyment rather than the absolute hardcore cutting edge psychopathic traits you have to have, I think,
he's a kind of Obi-Wan Kenobi of the Formula One grid, willing to pass on wisdom, but without the kind of physical attributes with really which to manifest any of his wisdom himself. So he has to pass it on to young Luke Schumacher.
Good stuff. Okay. Finally, Alfie, first race attended. Have you been to a F1 race?
I've never been to a race, although I did have tickets to go and watch the Melbourne Grand Prix. Here in Australia. I nailed them to a frisbee and I flung them over. I couldn't find any accommodation in Melbourne that wasn't. I looked at the Ibis budget while I was still in the UK and it was £650 a night for the Ibis budget. So
sleep on the beach, you coward.
Well, I could have found something, I think, but the company that I was with flew me out to the Comedy Store in Sydney, and I performed there for the weekend. And I watched it, instead of watching it at Albert Park, I watched it in a little sort of pokies bar. Do you know the poker machines?
What's a pokies? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which was not as good. And it was actually at the same time as some horse racing was going on, and they turned on the horse racing commentary, not the Formula One commentary, but they were getting very excited
about
the horses.
Quite a nice synergy, I reckon, though.
Yeah. So it sounded like they were calling the cars loads of, like, Nipple Whiskey was one of the ones that they kept on shouting. Here comes Nipple Whiskey.
Which F1 driver would that be?
Nipple Whiskey. I mean,
that's Verstappen. Probably.
Nipple Whiskey? No. Yeah. He's too young.
Well, no, it's because Verstappen seems like he is still sort of, I think he's got some mum issues, and so he's still on the nipple.
Some bad ones.
His face is sour enough that it looks like it might be whiskey coming out of it. All right, so for your answers, first F1 memory, don't have one. First race attended, haven't been to one. You've been a great guest, Alfie. Thanks for joining us here.
Thanks for having me.
Talking Point. No, thank you for being on. I mean, I genuinely mean that. Thanks for being on here. Alfie, before you go, anything you'd like to plug? I believe you've got a new Amazon Prime stand-up special available. Is that right?
If you have Amazon Prime, which let's face it, you do, then you can watch my show. Sensitive Man on Amazon Prime. My show Imagination is on YouTube. Maybe watch that for free. If you like it, watch the Amazon Prime one. And I have a podcast called Dirty Air with my friend Josh Weller about Formula One racing. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Great, good stuff, Alfie. Thanks for joining me on the show here, along with Finley Krabolda. Right, that's it for the show this week. Hope you got all the information you needed on the Miami GP. Next up on the calendar is Spain. It's Spain in 2 weeks' time, so I imagine Henry will be back for that. Thanks for watching. You can get us on all the socials. Check out the Planet F1 website and everything on Planet Sport, which is equally outstanding. I've been Mark Smith. This has been Talking Point. Until next time, goodbye.
Podcast Network.